Hello everyone and welcome to the first ever video game reviews from the Minutites podcast. I hope you all are having a pretty damn good week so far, and if you're not, I hope it gets better for you. But yes, I'm finally doing it. I've been talking about it since last summer, actually almost a whole year, when I did my 1 year anniversary episode. I've been talking about wanting to do video game reviews, and here I am, finally delivering, and I'm doing it as I said I was going to do. I am with the part two coming out this week. I am reviewing The Last of Us. That's right, The Last of Us. A game that when I got my PlayStation 4 back in 2015, I was asking my friends, you know, what games, you know, should I check out? What games should I check out? And pretty much all of them said, you gotta check out The Last of Us. You gotta play The Last of Us. Last of Us, that's the game you gotta check out. And it's like, alright, I'll check it out. You know, I was curious about it. I'd heard the name. I was kind of familiar with it. I knew some of the people that were in, some of the actors that were in the game. And just thought, you know what? Alright, I'll check it out. This'll be fun. And when I finally got it, and I see it was sometime in 2016 that I'd purchased it. I believe it was like spring of 2015. I think it was around the same time that I got Uncharted 4. But yeah, I finally bought it, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that when I played this game, it had such an impact on me that no other video game has ever come close to. Maybe to an extent some of the Uncharted games, but nothing like what this game did for me. You know, the story of it, just the themes of throughout, Neil Druckmann, the creative director of the game, he says that the theme of The Last of Us was a story of love, and throughout the journey of this game, that is pretty clear that yes, love is the main theme of the story. And with Last of Us Part 2 coming out, he said that the theme of it would be hate, which I'm very curious to see how that's going to turn out. And also, anyone who has not played this game before, I am going to be talking spoilers. I don't know how many spoilers, but I am going to be talking spoilers. So I'm going to give a 5-second pause for anyone who doesn't want this game to be spoiled for them. And once that 5 seconds is done, I will proceed with my as detailed of a review as I could possibly give. Alright, so here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Alright, if you're still with me, it's because either you've played the game and you already know all the spoilers, or you don't give a shit about spoilers. Either way, welcome to the journey with me. The prologue of The Last of Us. First of all, the game stars Troy Baker, who was pretty famous, you know, video game performer. He was the Joker in Batman Arkham Origins, and he was also Samuel Drake in Uncharted 4. And we also have Ashley Johnson, who's done some, like, I'd heard the name and I'd seen the face before, but I couldn't place where I'd seen her before. And turns out she had actually been on an episode of Roseanne way back, playing a DJ's first girlfriend, I think. And she'd done some other stuff in there. She was the waitress in the first Avengers movie that Captain America saves. The one, like, during the credits that she says, you know, Captain America saved me and blah blah blah. Yeah, that was her. That's who plays. She plays Ellie in this game. Troy Baker, he plays Joel. You know, they are the main antagonists, or not antagonists, rather protagonists of the game. I say antagonists, but because that's the thing with The Last of Us, there's really no clear-cut enemy in the story. I mean, you can see the people that, yeah, you know, that they, like, you know, like in most games, you have a definitive villain, definitive good guy, but in the world of The Last of Us, there's really no definitive bad guy, you know, because the whole game, everybody's trying to survive, you know, because the cordyceps fungus creates a viral infection that takes over. I don't know if it takes over the whole world, but it at least takes over America. And, you know, the people trying to survive this, you know, this, I don't know if it would be pandemic or epidemic. I think they say pandemic in the game. That it, you know, they form their little factions, you know, to survive. And, you know, there's quarantine zones set up all over the country, which is just very eerily similar to what our real life has been in recent months. And they have, like, you know, like, they have military, you know, units that are trying to keep everything in control, you know, while they're still working for, you know, it's 20 years after the prologue, it's 20 years, picks up 20 years later, and they're still trying to find a cure for this. Hopefully we won't have to wait that long for a cure for what's going on right now. But, yeah, and several other, you know, famous video game actors are Rowan Atkinson, who, as you know, as Nolan North has often said, that's, and Troy Baker has said, it's not a Naughty Dog game without this guy. Merle Dandridge, she's in there as well. She's a very, very popular actress on certain TV shows. I'm not familiar with the shows she's done, but she's pretty popular. She's actually she was actually on the Disney sing along as part of the, I think the second one, as part of the Broadway Disney section of the show that they were performing. And Nolan North is featured in the game as well. He plays a very, very interesting character that not even to this day, not a lot of people realize that that's him, which just says a lot about how great his performance was. And Ashley Scott is in there as well. She's wonderful. Yeah, a whole gambit of, you know, performers that are featured in this game. And yeah, but yeah, the prologue of the game, we open up to a little girl sleeping on the couch, and that's Sarah, who plays Joel's daughter. She was staying up because it was Joel's birthday, and she got him a watch as a birthday gift, because he's like, you know, because she said he was complaining about the watch being broken, and, you know, it's very tender, you know, father-daughter little relationship that we get to see in the few opening minutes of this story. You know, and he puts her to bed and, you know, very affectionately says, "Good night, baby girl." And it's sweet. It's such a sweet story. And it's like, you know, in just those few little moments, like, you're already like, you know what? I like these people. They're nice. This is good. You know, but then we cut to her waking up because the phone is ringing. House phone, you know. Because, you know, I don't know how many people in the world still have a house phone. But, you know, I've always been a house phone kind of person because, you know, cell phone towers go out. You're pretty much fucked if you only have a cell phone. Just like today, because I'm recording this on June 14th. And, yeah, cell phone towers and cell phone networks just went to shit all over the country. So, yeah, if you don't have a landline phone, you're fucked. But anyways, it was her uncle Tommy, who was Joel's brother, calling, you know, saying, "I need to speak with your daddy," you know, it's blah, 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 and then the phone line gets cut off. And then she wakes up trying to find her dad and sees on the news, on the TV in his bedroom, about, you know, that there's a situation going on at the hospital. And then there's an explosion, and she sees it off in the distance from his bedroom window, and she gets freaked out. Yeah, because of how close by that is. And then she goes downstairs to look for him and sees him running in from the backyard. And she asks, you know, if anybody's come inside or stay away from the windows. And she's, you know, confused what the hell's going on. And then one of the neighbors bursts in through the sliding glass window because of the infection. Like I said, the you know, cordyceps fungus infection It attaches, I think the way they explained it, it attaches to your brain, and little by little, because I think they said that it takes within a few hours, the infection starts to manifest and overtake your system, which is really scary, because a cordyceps fungus is a legitimate thing, and that freaks me the fuck out, but yeah. You know, so Joel takes his pistol and shoots him, the neighbor dead, and of course Sarah's freaked out because she's just a little girl. And then, you know, Tommy comes in or drives up to pick them up so they can get the fuck out of there. And Yeah, and it's an M-rated game, so there's like F-bombs throughout, which, you know, if you've listened to me, you know I throw them out quite a lot on here, so I enjoy it. And then as they're trying to escape, because they're in Texas, I don't remember exactly where in Texas that they start out. I think San Antonio. I'm not 100% sure. As they're trying to escape, they encounter all the other people trying to escape as well, and people running around and freaking out because they're being attacked by infected people, and the military's trying to set up a perimeter so that they can contain it, and Joel and Tommy trying to get Sarah out of there. They get hit by a truck or something, and they're trying to get out of there, trying to escape, get safe, and they end up trying to make it to the bridge, the overpass bridge, and they get stopped by a soldier, because they're outside of the perimeter that the military was trying to contain, and then wasn't speaking to on his headset to his superiors, gets the order to take him out, which is fucked up. It is. And Joel pleads with them, and the guy shoots anyway, and Tommy comes in and shoots the officer, military officer, or soldier, whatever the fuck he is, and then the scene that is it's a big gut punch right away, because they want to let you know that this game is gonna be fucked up. Joel's daughter dies in his arms, and first time I played this game, when that moment came up, I sat there with my mouth wide open, shocked, and legitimately with tears in my eyes, because it was just like, what the fuck? Because I've watched the making of documentary so many times, because I'm just so fascinated by the process of how they made the game. And hearing Troy Baker talk about how much of an emotional toll it took on him, and Hannah, who played the daughter, she played Sarah, Hannah Hayes, I believe is the name, she played Sarah, and just how emotionally drained they were, that when they did that first take, and they were all just so drained, and then Neil tells them, I want to do it again, and they keep on going, and keep on going, and keep on going, until they feel like they got it in the can, and then they come back a few weeks later to do it again, because they feel like they're missing something, and it's just the way they showed in the documentary, which actually if you have the I think the remastered version like I have, they have the making of documentary on there, but you could also find it on YouTube, on the PlayStation channel. I'll actually link it in the description for this, and also, if you're watching me on YouTube, you can see I'm wearing plaid, and I'm not wearing my glasses this time, because throughout the game, after the prologue, Joel, he's wearing a flannel shirt for the entire rest of the game, and he has his beard and all that, so, I figured, hey, reviewing my favorite PlayStation game, let me look the part. That Troy talks about saying, we got this in the can, come on, but Neil says, what I'm seeing is, I'm seeing a man broken. And he's like, hell yeah, he's broken, he just lost his heart. And they even talked about, and Troy talked to Nolan about it on their playthrough on the Retro Replay channel for playing The Last of Us. He said, it's like, what I don't have is, what is happening? I'm losing it. What's happening? I gotta fix this. It's not working. I'm losing her. She's gone. I'm broken. You didn't see the process beat by beat by beat by beat to get to that broken state. And it's like, you see it in that performance, and then you feel it when you realize that she's dead. And then that beautiful music from Gustavo Santaolalla that plays during that scene, it just adds to the atmosphere, because there is such a deep atmosphere throughout this game, because again, the whole theme of the game is, love, because after losing his daughter, Joel is a broken shell of who he once was. And then that's where we pick up 20 years later, and we see Tess, played by Annie Worshing, I think is how her last name is said. And like the way they, you know, they're back and forth between Joel and Tess, it's like you can kind of see like that they kind of have something going on, but they're not putting it in your face of exactly what their relationship is. And I like that. I like the subtlety of such things, like, because you know it's there, but it's not in your face, and I like that, you know. Because that's the thing, like, when I was growing up, you know, my brothers and I, we loved playing, like, you know, like, multiplayer, like, fighting games, especially, like, you know, like Mortal Kombat, like Street Fighter, Tekken, Virtual Fighter, if anyone remembers that game, you know, like, and several wrestling games, of course, you know, but, you know, as I've gotten older, I've become more into single-player, story-driven games, you know, like the Uncharted, you know, like the Arkham games, and The Last of Us, you know, because as I've gotten older and I've experienced life, you know, I'm gonna be 34 in about 6 months, I have a somewhat better understanding of the world. I appreciate great storytelling. I've grown to appreciate great storytelling, and that's what these games provide to me. And with The Last of Us, just, you know, even though I don't have any children, and I'm starting to feel dry throat, let me grab my water that's sitting all the way over here. I put it right there so it's right next to me. And just, because I don't have any children yet, not, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to have any, but if I do, I feel like how broken Joel became when he loses his, when he lost Sarah. I feel like that's how I would be. Like, I would be just completely broken, completely shut down, want to be left alone. I mean, most of the time I want to be left alone anyways, but, but it's just, yeah. And then you can kind of see, like, you know, that he cares about Tess. You can see it with how he's, you know, tending to the bruises on her face when she shows up at his where he's staying, basically, within that quarantine zone that they live in. And then, you know, they go on, she talks about, oh, you know, so-and-so has our weapons, and, you know, we gotta go get them. So then they go off into the zone to go get them, to go retrieve them, from Robert, who's played by Rowan Atkindown. Which, just recently, when I looked up his IMDb, apparently, and they listed him as the actor who plays Doomsday in Batman vs. Superman. Whether or not he actually did that, I am not 100% sure. But if I ever get to meet him, I would love to ask, like, hey, did you do the mocap for Doomsday in Batman vs. Superman? Yeah, because if he did, then that just makes me love him even more, because, I mean, he's been in all the Uncharted games, so I love him for that. I don't think he was in Lost Legacy, anyways, because he was Navarro in the first game, he was Tenzin in the second game, and he was Talbot in the third game, and then he was Alcazar in the fourth game. But yeah, if he was Doomsday in Batman vs. Superman, you know, I love you even more. I'm saying that as if he's watching. He's not watching it. Why would he watch me? Why would anybody watch me, for that matter? But anyways, yes. Tess and Joel, they're going to go after Robert because he has their guns. So as they're trying to get into, you know, into the area where he's staying, because Tess knows where he is, you know, there's a bombardment or an attack, whatever the terminology would be. Ambush, that's the right word. That's it. Or ambush. An ambush from the group called the Fireflies, which, like I said, you know, people trying to survive in the, you know, pandemic with the virus and all that, that they formed their own little faction. And then the Fireflies is, you know, essentially a militant group trying to take out the government or go against the government in, you know, the quarantine zones, trying to take them all out to survive. So, yeah, and it is led by, sorry, I'm trying to remember, all the everything in the game is running through my head, I'm mixing up names, you know, it's played by Merle Dandridge, I can't remember her name now, Fuckity fuck fuck. Nadine? No, Nate. That's from Last of Us. No, that's from Uncharted. Let me look it up. See, that's freezing. I hate when that happens. I fucking hate when that happens. All right, Merle Dandridge. Let's see that name because I don't remember. All right, come on, Merle Dandridge. But let's scroll through this list of her acting jobs she's had, and she's so beautiful. I love her. Yes, I'm talking about her right now. Marlene. God damn, that's the name. Fucking Marlene. How did I forget that? But anyways, yes. Yeah, they go off because she's the leader of the Fireflies, Marlene. And Joel and Tess get to Robert to try to get the guns. They end up killing Robert because he sold the guns to the Fireflies. And then that's where they bump into Marlene. And she's a little fucked up and bloodied up because her and the Fireflies were taking on the government, trying to get shit. I played it just a few days ago, and a lot of it is already jumbled in my head, because I played this game so many times, and I finally beat it on survival, which that took a lot of work, especially in the last part of the game, the last chapter of the game. Because I had to really learn to be tactical with how I took these guys out, and it was a lot of fun, trying to be tactical and precise and trying to save my ammunition, because that's the other thing. It's not like in the Uncharted games where you can find a full batch of ammunition for these guns. The supplies and ammunition are few and far between. Like you can literally find one bullet at a time, and I just love that because it's realistic. It's a world of it's a broken world. People, supplies are very limited, and they're limited. They're scarce, and you use whatever you can find. It's realistic. It's in a survival situation. That's what would happen, and I love that. You have to be very, I'm trying to find the right terminology for it. Not liberal, because liberal means you just go willy nilly with it. Shit, what is it? Not cautious. That doesn't sound right. I'm sure it'll come to me. So I'm trying to think of, because I feel like it's a military term, but I'm not thinking about it. Judicial, I guess would be it. I don't know. But yes, just you have to be very careful with your ammunition. Make sure you don't waste all of it because you don't know when you're gonna find more of ammo that you need for that specific weapon. Because you can only use specific weapons at a time, depending on how you level up the game when playing as Joel, where you can have multiple weapons. Like you can have a storage of like 6 or 7, handguns, and then like 3 rifles and bow and arrow and a blowtorch. Which blowtorch is probably my favorite weapon, but goes out very quickly. But it comes in handy when taking out, the infected and the clickers and the bloater, especially the bloater. Although the bloater is the hardest one to kill. And apparently there's another level of the infection that's going to be in Last of Us Part 2. I don't know if it's, because I think it's, because there's still, the infected and the runners and the clickers, and then there's another level right there by the clickers, like between clicker and bloater. Which I'm very curious to see what else, because I remember in the one of the last previews that Neil Druckmann had shared on the PlayStation YouTube channel that they showed it, where it was like there's like little pustule things that burst and whatever the fluid that comes out, you know, can kill you. So that'll be, I'm interested to see how that works out. But yeah, the Marlene shows up and she offers the guns to Tess and Joel if they do this favor for her to smuggle something out of the city. And because, you know, her men were supposed to do it for her, but her men got taken out, so those, you know, Joel and Tess are the only people that were the first people she saw. She needed them for that. Well, I think she said she needed Robert, because Robert would have been the one to do it for her, but since they killed him, it was tasked onto Joel and Tess. And so then that's where we are first introduced to Ellie. And because, as we find out, after the, you know, a few minutes into meeting her and they're trying to sneak her out of the city, they find out that she's infected, but has somehow become immune to it. Because when you're bitten by an infected, you know, person, that they say that you start to turn within a few hours, but her bite was 3 weeks old, you know. And at first, Joel is very reluctant and hesitant to even take on the task before finding out that she's infected, and he doesn't believe that she's infected at all, you know, at first. You know, but then Tess starts to come around and, like, you know, like, all right, you know what, you know, let's see, because they're supposed to take her to the Capitol building, where there'll be other Fireflies that know what to do, where to take her, and all that shit. You know, and Tess is the one that starts to believe it a little more. You know, but then they get chased down by the military people, and they have to do what they can to survive. And then they come out, they bump into several infected and clickers along the way. And I tell you, if you don't have a shiv, you know, like a knife with you, you know, to survive, you know, if you're not fully stocked on those, you know, when the clickers come after you, you're fucked, because you can't have a fist fight with the clickers. If you have like a melee weapon, whether it's like a 2x4, I think a baseball bat is another one, and a lead pipe is one of the other weapons, which I think the lead pipe is my favorite, because you can get more hits out of that one. And also the crafting system that they have in there with the weapons, where you can craft like sharp objects onto a 2x4 or bat or the pipe, so that gives an instant kill, which that's why I love doing it, especially with the pipe, because again, you get more hits out of the pipe, but if you have it, you know, binded with a sharp blade, you get one hit and they're dead. I love that. And okay, take another drink. And that's the thing, like I said, like, this is a fucked up game. The violence is just, I mean, I always think it's hilarious, the argument that politicians try to make about, you know, violent video games, that, oh, they influence a lot of the mass shootings and stuff that happen in this country, and I'm just always saying, like, I've been playing these kind of games my entire life. I've been playing since the first Mortal Kombat game back in 1993, and not once have I ever felt the urge to commit mass murder. Not once. And I've never had the urge to take a rope spear and fling it at somebody like Scorpion and be like, come here. But you know, rather than take the people that don't want to take responsibility, they'd rather blame other people. You know, especially the parents. You know, the parents of the Columbine shooters. They didn't want to take responsibility for their, you know, possible poor parenting, and they decided, let's blame it on Marilyn Manson because they happened to listen to Marilyn Manson. You know, and I suppose the other mass shootings in recent years, because, oh, this person liked to play this video game, let's blame it on the video game. No. You know, people who play these video games is because they want to escape those realities. They don't play those games to live those realities. They play these games to escape those realities. You know, that's the thing. Check out one of the episodes of the Last of Us playthrough that Nolan North and Troy Baker do, that Merle Dandridge is on there, because she's on, because it's the second to last one. No, because the last one is where they talk to Ashley Johnson and Neil Druckmann. The third to last one that she's on there, and she gives such a great monologue or speech, whatever you want to call it, about, you know, video games and what they mean to the people who play them. I absolutely love it, and it just made me fall in love with her even more than I already was. Please check that out. You know what? I think I'll actually link that video in the description as well. But yes, back to the game itself. Oh yeah, keep going into these little tangents about stuff that has not really anything to do with the games, but yeah, here we are. And we meet Ellie and find out that she's infected, and then they bump into all these clickers and infected along the way, and other people, a lot of the military especially, and then they finally reach the Capitol building, and that's where we see that the Fireflies that were there waiting had been killed. And I'm assuming by the military, but we don't know for sure. They don't say for sure who killed them, but, you know, and Tess is flipping out because of that, and then we find out that Tess is also infected and has a bite right there on the neck. And, you know, when she shows the wound, she, you know, shows the wound right there, and we see that it's already more infected than the bite that Ellie has on her forearm. And then, you know, the way, like, Tess says it, it's like, this is 3 weeks, I was bitten an hour ago, and it's already worse. This is fucking real, Joel. And Tess essentially sacrifices her life so that Joel can fulfill this mission that they were reluctantly tasked with. And I think even Troy Baker said, like, that she is, like the unsung hero of the story, because her sacrifice is what allowed Joel and Ellie to escape and make their journey all the way to, you know, where they end up at the end of the game. And, of course, you know, Joel is angry that Tess died, had to die, because, you know, we see his reaction to not wanting to leave her there. You know, he wants to stay there and fight with her, fight alongside her, because he cared about her that much. Just, you know, he doesn't say it, you know, in the exact words. And so him and Ellie, they try to escape. They get mixed up with a lot of the military there as well. And when they finally get out, they go to a neighboring town, because it's in, like, the New England area. So they're, like, in, like, Lincoln, Massachusetts, or New Hampshire. I'm not 100% sure. Nolan North knows, because he grew up up there, so he knows. And to meet with Bill, who is the person that him and Tess would, like, you know, get supplies from every now and then when they needed to. So Joel goes to the little abandoned town that Bill lives in, and, you know, because they need to get a car so that they can continue this journey to get Ellie to the Fireflies and figure out, you know, what they need to do, because, you know, since the Fireflies that they were going to drop, you know, hand her off to are dead, they decide, I'm going to go to see my brother Tommy's, because he was a Firefly, and, you know, he'll help me out, he'll know where to go and what to do. And that's where more, you know, crazy shenanigans start to go on. Not really shenanigans, but more fucked up shit happens. And, you know, because of Bill, I don't remember the actor's name who plays Bill, but I wouldn't necessarily say comic relief, but he did add a little more humor in certain scenes and a little more levity to it. And just with Ellie, you know, being essentially burdened with the responsibility of her the apparent immunity that she has to the virus, that, you know, she is essentially the cure for mankind, or whatever the term for it is. Yeah, because I think that's how she even jokingly says it when they reach where they were supposed to meet the Fireflies. You know, like, hey, cure for mankind right here. And you know, that, like, in the middle of, you know, all, you know, even with all that, like, she's still just a kid. Because, like, even one part where she's, like, she sees, like, you know, like, Fireflies, like actual Fireflies. And she even says, she's like, sorry, I got lost in myself. You know, because again, she's just an innocent child in all of this. That's probably the most fucked up thing in the whole story, that she's still just an innocent child. I think she's like 13 or 14 years old, but just she's just a child that is burdened with that responsibility, and it's just, you feel sorry for her, honestly. And you know, and as time starts to progress, you know, after, you know, they, you know, meet up with Bill, and Bill gives them a couple of weapons, you know, a nail bomb, which probably my second favorite weapon in the entire game. Just, you know, either throw it at the enemy or roll it over to the enemy, and, you know, it explodes and kills them instantly. You know, shreds them to pieces. It's awesome. But yeah, you know, Ellie just, yeah, her childlike innocence in throughout all this, like, and she's, and oh, and it's just like, you think, just thinking about it, because she has to, you know, help Joel to survive this mission as well, by killing a few people along the way as well, you know, and it's a lot to have to deal with. I think when I was, because I was watching the cutscenes on the, because they have the option of watching all the cutscenes in the game with commentary from Troy and Ashley and Neil. And it's kind of funny, because, like, one of the cutscenes that they're at, wherever Bill, you know, just lives, basically, and he has a stack of, like, magazines and other stuff, and, because, you know, she was taking some stuff and storing it in her backpack, and then Bill scolds her, you know, saying, don't, what I say about touching my stuff, and she's just, like, you know, because, like, you know, like, something that a kid would say, she's like, I'm just fixing your stupid pile. You know, like, we know kids, when kids are touching things or doing things that they're not supposed to be doing, they come up with, they say their excuse is something as silly as that. You know, I'm trying to fix your stupid pile, and it's like, that's what kids say. I mean, I'm sure I said things like that all the time, but yeah. And then, you know, because she took a few comic books from that he had from over there, and a gay porn magazine, because Bill was gay, you know. And, you know, it was an interface in it, you know, like, people, you know, say, like, oh, they shoved their agenda, right? I'm like, no, it's just, he's gay, and that's it. No big deal. Because he was talking to Joel, like, yeah, you know, I had someone that I cared about, a partner, you know, someone that I had to watch over, and, you know, he was very angry while describing this person. And then one of the houses that they end up in, from trying to run away from clickers and all that, is the house that his partner had hung himself, because he was bitten and decided to take his own life before being, so he wouldn't have to become one of those things. And you see Bill is, like, heartbroken seeing him like that, but then he has to snap out of it, because he doesn't want to, you know, because he wants to save face, basically. And it's just like, yeah, I get it, you know. And but the way he plays it, the actor, again, I can't remember his name, but the way he plays his performances in that scene, it's like, because before that, in the previous scene, that he was playing it off like he was the one that left, you know, that Bill left to be on his own, because, like, hey, you know, I gotta do this on my own, you know, that's the only way to survive. But the way he plays off, because he's you see the sad look on his face, and he's just, you know. Like, and I think even they said it in the commentary for that, they see that what probably really was, is that Frank, that's the guy's name, that Frank left Bill, and Bill is still heartbroken by that. That's why he reacted the way he did. Yeah. Like I said, so much emotion, so many, just, I don't know, yeah. But yeah, then after all of that, and then Ellie makes her first kill also. Well, not really her first kill, but just, you know, trying to save Joel's life, because, you know, a bunch of these hunters, I think is what they were called, you know, that they got to Pittsburgh, and Joel and Ellie trying to survive by taking on the hunters, is what they were called, and this is where, you know, after she saves his life, he gives her, you know, a sniper rifle that they find sitting on, like, a little balcony platform. And he's like... And... Because at first, Joel yells at her, because he falls into, like, down an elevator shaft when they're trying to get through the area, and tells her, stay where you are, I'll find my way back to you. And... You know, she... You know, she said that she got worried because it was taking so long, and she goes to save him, and he gets mad at her, saying, like... You know, because she says, like, you know, aren't you glad that, you know, that I didn't listen and I came here, you know, whatever. And she's like, you know what, I'm glad, like, I'm glad I didn't get my head blown off by a goddamn kid. And then she stands up for herself. She's like, you know what, no. It was him or me, thanks for saving my life, blah, blah, blah. Like, you got anything like that for me, Joel? And... Sorry, I had to take a breath. And... Then yeah, they find that sniper rifle, and he tells her, like, you know that you make every shot count. You know, as soon as you fire one off, get another round in there, because you want to be quick. And then right before he hops off the little platform to go take out the other guys, he just says, you know, just so we're clear, it was either him or me. You know, that was like his way of saying thank you. And because you can see little by little, you know, he's starting to come around, and he's starting to love this girl, you know, as a father loves a daughter. And then, you know, after she, you know, helps him take these guys out, he takes one of the handguns from one of the hunters and hands it off to her. It's like almost like a, you know, and she even has like a look on her face, and like walking up to him holding the little rifle like that. It's like almost as like, did I do good? Are you proud of me? You know, again, like a daughter wanting approval from the father. Shit. Just, again, just, especially, like, fathers who, you know, love their daughters very, very much, who play this game, those little moments like that are gonna resonate with them very clearly. Because I know, especially, like, a lot of my friends who do have daughters, and when they saw the movie Logan, seeing the closeness between, you know, Logan and Laura, you know, yeah, it hit them in all the right spots. and then, yeah, along the way of trying to, because, yeah, these hunters, they're just so fucked. They even, like, took possession of a tank, that, you know, to try to hunt down anyone that they deem as an outsider. And along the way, they meet Henry and Sam, you know, two other civilians trying to make their way through because they want to join up with the Fireflies. And they team up with Joel and Ellie. And that's because Henry and Sam, Sam is Henry's brother. They're brothers, and, you know, they team up and take on the hunters, and then they, you know, take on a few of the infected along the way as well. And... Yeah, and that whole moment, that middle section of the game was really, you know, because you get they have their, after they deal with a bunch of the hunters, and, you know, dealing with one, like, the first time I played this, when I got to this part with the, you know, the guy, if you play the game, the big house, the guy that has the sniper rifle shooting at Joel, trying to make his way across. Now, when I first played the game, I had a hell of a fucking time trying to get through that one. But, like, you know, after you get through that part, and they have, like, that moment of serenity and calm when inside the other house, where they can relax, and just, you know, they're just relaxing, enjoying some baked beans and other shit like that, and just talking, sharing stories. It's a nice, you know, moment of solitude, I guess would be the right term for it. Oh, it's raining. I can hear the raining outside my window. And it's a nice moment, and then Ellie and Sam are having a moment talking to each other, and talking about like what did they fear, and then Ellie goes off to say goodnight, and we find out that Sam was bitten, and it's just like, oh fucking hell. And then when the next morning they wake up, Sam is attacking Ellie, and Joel springs into action. It's like shit, he's turning. He takes his gun out. Henry shoots the gun out of Joel's hand, and he's like, that's my fucking brother. And he is the one that shoots Sam, and he's so devastated and heartbroken at the fact that he had to do that, and he just keeps repeating, this is all your fault, it's all your fault. And he's pointing the gun at Joel, he's shouting it out at Joel, but again, when I was listening to the commentary for the cutscene, Neil was saying that when he's saying it's all your fault, he's not saying it to Joel. He's saying it to himself. Because he allowed this to happen. And that's just, like, damn. And then the guilt that Henry felt in that moment, he shot himself in the head. And then just cut to black. Next segment of the game. And it's just like, fuck, man. And I remember watching The Last of Us playthrough with Nolan North and Troy Baker, because Nolan was just not prepared at all for when Sarah dies at the beginning of the game. And then when he gets to that part with Henry and Sam, he gets emotional too, and he kind of yells at Troy. He's like, dude, he did it to me again. anyone who has not subscribed to the Retro Replay channel, please do so. They have some fucking awesome shit on there. But yeah, and then after that is when we, get to where Joel and Ellie are. And I think it's Wyoming, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, I believe is the location. Where they find Joel's brother Tommy. And this little compound and community that he and his wife, the wife played by Ashley Scott, and other people, that they've built this community where they've been able to survive and thrive and make a life there for themselves. And it's nice. It's a nice little thing. And, because Joel and Tommy had not seen each other in years, so they have to have, their little reunion, and I have two older brothers, and I haven't seen them in so many years, and I fucking hate that, so I can relate to that part of them, not having seen each other in so many years, and just just how long it had been since they were together. Yeah, I can relate to that part. Although the reason why they drifted apart, I can't relate to that, because that's a whole other situation. But Joel confides in Tommy about Ellie and how she is immune to the virus. And he was saying, I've seen her breathe in enough spores to take out anybody, and nothing happens to her, because that's the other thing. Where there's spores in some of these locations, it's because that's where a lot of the infected are, and those are the parts that I usually hate the most when playing the game, because just I hate when the spores are there. Oh fuck! It's 2:20 right now, so I gotta hurry this up. It's 2:20 a.m. that I'm doing this, but he confides in Tommy, and he tries to pass Ellie off to Tommy, since Fireflies used to be his crew. He knows where to go. Tries to hand her off to him, And Ellie, figuring out that that's what's going on, she runs away. And then they follow her to this little house in another, like a neighboring community. And in this part, it's actually one of my favorite parts in the whole game, where Joel and Ellie have a moment together where, you know, Ellie is reading a diary of someone, of the girl that used to live in that house, just seeing how silly some of the things people used to worry about way, way back before the virus took over. And then Joel and Ellie having a moment because she's angry at Joel wanting to pass her off to Tommy. And she confides to him, it's like, you know, everyone that I've ever cared for has either died or left me. Everyone, fucking except for you. And she says, don't tell me that I'll be safer with somebody else, because the truth is I'll be just be more scared. But just before that is, Ellie was saying, it's like, I'm not her. And she says, excuse me, or something like that. And she's like, I'm not, you think I'm gonna end up like Sarah, or whatever she says. And that's one of my favorite lines, where he just like, you're treading on some mighty thin ice. And she says, I'm sorry about your daughter, Joel, but I've lost people too. And then just, you have no idea what loss is. And just so angry when he says that. And then that's when she says, truth, I would be more scared line. And, Joel, again, being angry, saying, you're right. You are not my daughter. And it's because, he's just so wrapped up in his own feelings, kind of thing. That he feels himself getting close to her, but he doesn't want to get close because he's afraid of losing her like he lost his daughter. And then there's a moment later in the game that parallels the beginning part with Sarah. But yeah, that's when, after this, they go off to the University of Eastern Colorado, a made-up university just for the game, because that's where the Fireflies are supposed to be. And that's, the Fireflies that were there had left, or they died and been infected and killed or whatever. And then they get into it with some hunters that were in the area as well. And we get a moment that was very unexpected for me, that Joel gets stabbed in the side by a rusty pipe and is bleeding out, and Ellie has to try to basically rescue him the whole time. And you're bleeding out, trying to make your way out of there, and screen goes black, and you think he died because you cut to the next scene. It's winter time, and you're playing as Ellie, and she's hunting, to get some food for survival. It starts off with her shooting a little bunny rabbit, which just, oh, poor little bunny. And then we get the sequence of her trying to hunt the deer, shoot it with the bow and arrow. When I played it the first time, that took me a good 20 or 30 minutes to do. But since I've played it more times since then, I'm able to get it down in about 5 minutes at most. Then that's where we were introduced to the character David, who is played by Nolan North, which, again, not a lot of people realize that's him. Because I think they were talking about it again on their playthrough at the end, even to this day, that people are still surprised to learn that David was played by Nolan North, because people are so familiar with Nolan North from the Uncharted games and other video games that he's done, because he's done a shitload of games. He's done Assassin's Creed, the Uncharted. He played Penguin in the Arkham games. I think he did a voice for one of the characters in the Half-Life games. I don't remember. It's a lot of games. He's basically and Troy Baker are the king of video games. That's just what it is. And he was also on Pretty Little Liars. I don't know if anyone who watches these things, listens to my shows, and have watched Pretty Little Liars, but he's on there as well. Or he was, because the show ended 3 or 4 years ago. But David, that, you know, a very unassuming gentleman when we first meet him, you know, very honest and has a very, like, very quiet, whispery kind of voice. You know, because that was the way that they wanted to play it. Make it like, you know, that he's someone who's easy to trust and that you can believe everything he says, because even though, you know, we find out he's kind of a fucked up human being, he's always honest with her. He does not lie. He's very honest and does not deceive anybody, because, you know, because David and Ellie have to work together to take on some of the infected and the clickers, because they get ambushed by them, and a bloater as well. I fucking hate the bloaters. You know, afterwards, that's when, you know, they're sitting by a campfire, because, you know, they have the deer is right there. That was the deal, that she wanted to get some antibiotics in exchange for giving them the deer. And they're sitting by a little campfire to stay warm. And this is another one where it's like, just the delivery of it just is so creepy. And that David is saying, like, you know, a few weeks ago, sent a group of my men out to look for food and supplies, and, you know, they were, slaughtered by a crazy man, and just the way he delivered, I'm gonna, like, he's like, and get it. They said he was traveling with a little girl. See, everything always happens for a reason. And just his delivery is just so freaking creepy, and I love it. I get chills whenever I get to that scene. And he says, "Yeah, don't worry. It's not your fault. You're just a little girl." And then the friend, I think his name was James, that he was just saying, it's like, James, lower the gun. You know, because Ellie has the rifle pointed at him, and the guy has the gun pointed at her, and he just says, "Lower the gun and give her the medicine." He gives it to her, and he says, you know, the others aren't going to like this, and David just, well, that's not your concern. Because, again, just, he's being honest, and, you know, not being a terrible human being. You know, so then she takes the antibiotics and travels back and goes into a little house that she's been staying in, where she's been taking care of Joel all this time. We don't know how much time has passed, but, you know, we're assuming at least 3 weeks. And she's been taking care of Joel. But then we find out that David had sent some people after her, because he wanted to bring her, Ellie, into their community. And, you know, when she's trying to escape, you know, to get them away from Joel, you hear one of them say, is that the guy, one guy says, like, you know, kill her or whatever. The other one says, but David said, like, I don't give a fuck what David said. And then you go through a whole thing of her having to kill all these men one by one, which, that's, you know, usually a lot of fun when I get to play as her in the game. And then, and, you know, David finally captures her, you know, knocks her out with a little chokehold, and locks her up in a cell. And then when she comes to, she sees a guy chopping up human body parts, you know, on a butcher's table. And David comes in to give her some food, and it's a, you know, plate of, you know, the deer meat. He swears it's the deer meat. And, you know, she's just is so disgusted by what she sees, because she realizes they're cannibals. And he rationalizes as, you know, we do what we need to survive, which, honestly, he's got a point there, you know. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I lived long enough to be in such a, you know, survivalist situation where I have to kill other human beings and eat their flesh to survive. I don't know if I could do that, but, you know, a survivalist mentality, kind of understand where he's coming from. And then, you know, Ellie breaks David's finger. Because he goes over and, you know, touches her hand, like, I see that you're special. You know, and she bites, I think she bites his finger, and then he gets angry at her, Because he's trying to be, he's like, you know, I'm trying very hard, you know, to convince these guys not to kill you, or whatever the fuck. And then, you know, then the next morning, they drop her on the top of the butcher's table, because they're going to chop her up, and because they decided, I guess overnight, they're going to chop her up. And that's when she says, you know, I'm infected, and they see the bite mark on her arm, and the guy's freaking out with him, and yeah, and that's when she has to go on a chase for survival, trying to escape all of David's men. And, you know, because David is very, very convinced that he can get her over to his side. And she's trying her best to get the fuck away from him and go back to Joel. And, you know, that's another fun little sequence, because it's winter time, crazy snow, and barely see the visibility, it's shit. Which, in the middle of a blizzard, that's usually how it goes. You know, but then you get to play Joel again, because he wakes up in that house. He's wondering where the hell is Ellie, and then he gets out of the house, and he has to fight some of David's men to, you know, in trying to find her. And that is a lot of fun, because Joel gets to be the crazy fucked up killer that he had been, which was why him and Tommy had the falling out. And yeah, where he, two of David's men, he has one strapped to a radiator, another one tied to a chair, that he, you know, stabs him in the leg, and then chokes him out, and then snaps his neck. And then the other guy that's, you know, tied to the radiator, because he says, like, you mark it on the map to, you know, to for where Ellie and them would be. And the guy's like, he told you everything you wanted to know, blah, blah, and he says, that's fine. I believe him. And then takes the pipe, and then boom! Smashes the guy's face, and it's just like, fucking hell, I love that. And cut back to Ellie again, trying to escape from David, and she ends up in this big, like, you know, like hotel diner, which, you know, kind of looks like a Cracker Barrel, now that I think about it. Which I'm sure it's not a Cracker Barrel, but it kind of looks like it, because I've eaten in enough of them to have a basic memory of what the dining room plan looks like. It's kind of like, it looks kind of like that. And yeah, that's where we get some, that's where you get to really immerse yourself in trying to survive as Ellie. And yeah, because, like, they have broken dishes all over the floor, where if you step on one of them and trying to sneak around away from him, he'll hear the little k-k-k-k-k-k from the plates. You know, that was a terrible sound effect. And he'll come right after you, and then shoom, with his little machete. Or machete. And just, yeah. Holy shit, I've been talking for over an hour. Huh, did not expect that. And just, yeah, and then we get to see her, and when you finally get to the end of that whole segment, and where she just snaps and takes the machete and starts hacking at David, just boom, boom, you know, like, she's so overcome with that rage, and she, you know, and Joel finally snaps her out of it. It's me. And he's just, you know, holding her face, and then she starts to cry, and she says, and then he just embraces her, and he goes, oh, baby girl. And it's just like, oh, God. And again, and that's another moment that gets you right in the frickin' heart, because he called his daughter Sarah baby girl, and he's calling Ellie that now, and it's like, that's it. Because he loves her like a daughter. You know, he'd been through that journey with her. It's like she is his surrogate daughter at that point. It's like, ah, oh, God damn it. And then we cut to the next segment when they're finally wherever the fireflies are, and you know, they see that, like, she's distant now because of what happened with David. She's very withdrawn from all of it. And then we get my other favorite moment of the whole game, the giraffe scene. Such a beautiful moment of serenity, and just, yeah, and it is such a beautiful scene. Like, even the music is so great too. Again, Gustavo Santaolalla, just beautiful music, and And yeah, just the moment with the that moment with the giraffe, so peaceful. And it is one of my favorite moments of the entire game. And I just, every time I get to it, I just sit there just like that. And I just watch the screen and I enjoy the moment because it's really nice. And then like in that after, then they get to the cutscene after that. And then Joel, that he says like, we don't have to do this. We can just go back to Tommy's and be done with all this. And then Ellie just like, after all we've been through, it can't be for nothing. And then Joel looks back and sees that last giraffe walking away, and it's just like, yeah, because the giraffe is a very, very, you see giraffes several times throughout the games, and it's like you don't realize that you're seeing them, but you do. You see them in the beginning with Sarah, when you're still inside the house. See them in certain buildings that you have to cross through to navigate through the game. You see them when you're in the Toy Story area with Sam and Henry, and when you first meet them, and it's just, yeah, you see. And also another part in the beginning of the game, when walking through the quarantine area with Tess, that there's a little girl hugging a stuffed giraffe. I remember that too, and just, yeah, and that's where her in the during the, again with Meryl Dandridge and all on with Troy and Nolan, that they coined it the giraffe moment. Searching, we're all searching for our giraffe moment, and I love that. I think I'm actually inspired to even try to make that into a t-shirt, searching for my giraffe moment, and just seeing who understands that. And yeah, just after that, because because it's like because you can kind of get a sense that like with Ellie, it's like she's willing to give herself to save the world with this cure for the virus. And Joel, again, having grown so close to her and loving her like a daughter, was not ready to do that. And then, after they take on a few more clickers and bloaters, we get to a part where, they almost drown in this subway area trying to get to the hospital where the Fireflies are located. And we, that she, because throughout the game, she makes it known that she can't swim. And according to some of the trailers and previews that I've seen for part two, at some point Ellie learns how to swim because she's swimming in this one. Because I'm assuming Joel teaches her how to swim because it's like, I think, 5 years between this game and then part two. Or is it 8 years? I don't know. It's definitely at least five. But. And the, she's in the water, she's knocked out in the water, so Joel has to swim to save her. And then once they get out of the water, he's trying to wake her up, doing like chest compressions and all that. And again, it's almost parallel to him trying to save Sarah at the beginning of the game. And then that's when Fireflies, they find them, they knock him out because he's not cooperating. And then he wakes up in the one of the hospital beds, and there's Marlene right there, because she had survived, which was a big surprise for me when I played it, because when we first see her in the game, she's bleeding out from after her fight with the government military people. Excuse me. And then we find out, that's when she says, that the fungus has mutated, and that's why she's immune, and it's on her brain, and they have to operate on her to get re remove it from her brain so that they can synthesize, the vaccine for the virus. And when Joel realizes that that means she's gonna die, he's not having it. And Marlene just, tries to convince him, like, this is bigger than you, bigger than her, bigger than me. This is about saving the world, kind of thing. Which it is. And so then, she orders her men to escort Joel out of the building, and of course, he fights back. And this is where, like I said, when I was playing it on survival, difficulty setting, having to be learning how to be very tactical and very smart with my ammunition was a lot of fun, because you have to work your way through all these fireflies. You know, work your way up level by level by level. Well, not really level by level, but I think like 2 or 3 levels maybe, in different sections of the hospital that you have to get through. And yeah, it's a lot of people you're gonna have to kill to get to her. Because he has grown to love her like he loved his daughter Sarah, and he is not ready to lose another daughter. So he fights his way through all the fireflies, killing them one by one, by one, by one, by one, by one, by one, until he gets to her in the operating room. And also, like, as you're navigating through different rooms in there to get more, like, supplies and stuff, they have, like, little audio, like, little journal recordings from Marlene, where you can hear in her voice how she does not want to kill Ellie in order to do this, that she wishes there was another option. And she's even talking about, I can't remember the name, but it's Ellie's mom, that she's, like, speaking to her through these recordings, that she saying that she misses her, and, you know, I made this promise to you to protect her, and, you know, yeah. And it just makes me wonder, you know, maybe we can get a prequel game at some point that takes place in the 20 year, somewhere in the 20 year span of from the prologue to where we pick up after the opening credits. That would be a fun game, you know. If I knew how to reach Neil Druckmann directly, besides going on Twitter, I would love to suggest that idea to him. Unless he's already thinking it, I don't know. Because I would love to learn who Ellie's mom is and what her relationship to Marlene, you know, was, and why Marlene became such a, like, a protective mother figure to Ellie. But then, yeah, like, you finally get to the operating room, and there's the 3 surgeons ready to work on her, and you kill the first doctor, because you have to kill the first doctor, and the other two doctors are terrified, scared for their lives. And you have the option of sparing them, or you can kill both of them, or kill one and spare the other. You know, I've done both ways. I've killed the first doctor, spared them, and I've killed one and one, spared the other, then I've killed all 3 of them. Either way, after you do that, you unhook Ellie off the machines, and you carry her trying to escape the hospital, which again parallels him carrying Sarah trying to escape all the madness at the beginning of the game. You know, and then again, then when the music kicks in, the Gustavo Santaolalla music. So, such a beautiful track. I'm trying to remember. It's trying to remember what the name of the track was. Shit, let me look it up. Alright, because I have it saved on here. Let me look it up. All Gone. That's the name of the track. All Gone. It's All Gone, No Escape. That's the track that plays. Which is actually a variation of the music that plays when when Sarah dies. Because that one is just called, it's called All Gone, Aftermath. And All Gone, No Escape is what plays when Joel is trying to escape the hospital with Ellie. And then he finally gets to the elevator to get out of there. And then Marlene stops him once they reach the parking garage, and she's trying to convince him that, you know, this is the only way. You gotta please give her back so we can make this cure for mankind. And then in all that, you see him, he's contemplating, and then they cut to Joel driving away in the car and has a look on his face, like, where you don't know what's going on. But then you see Ellie waking up in the back seat of the car. And, yeah, and that's when we find out, then he tells her, like, we found the Fireflies, and he lies to her, saying, turns out there's a whole lot more like you who are immune. And they've stopped looking for a cure. And then he says that we're going back to Tommy's. But then they cut back to what happened after Marlene confronted him. That he shoots her in the stomach, puts Ellie in the back seat of the car, and then she says, please, you know, let me go, or something like that. And he says, you'll just come right after, and then, boom, right in the face, kills her dead. And then, yeah, because when he tells Ellie, you know, what happened, you know, the lie about what happened, you can kind of see it in her face that she's just, like, disappointed. Not so much disappointed because she believes what he's saying, more of, like, disappointed because she's like, I was willing to give my life for this cause. Kind of. That's how I interpret it, at least. And then they show them, they finally, you know, reached, you know, where the community where Tommy and all them live. And then that's, you know, that's where the story concludes. Because they're at the top, like the little hilltop, right above where the town is. And then she confronts Joel and talks about, you know, my friend Riley, we were both bitten at the same time. And, you know, we've, you know, said that let's do this together. We'll die. We'll lose ourselves together. And, you know, she was the first to go. I'm still waiting for my turn. No, she said, like, you know, it was, you know, she was the first to go. Then it was Tess, and then Sam, and I'm waiting for my turn. And that's when Joel says, you know, you have to, you know, I've struggled a long time with surviving. You gotta find something worth fighting for. And then she confronts him one last time, saying, swear to me that everything you said about the Fireflies is true. He says, I swear. And then she just stays quiet for a few seconds, and then just, okay. That's the end of the game. And I know a lot of people that have played the game that when it ends at that moment, it's just like, what the fuck? And then you're just hungry for more. I know I certainly was. And then when I finally beat the game, after that was the PlayStation Experience event from 2016. And that's when they unveiled the first trailer for The Last of Us Part 2. And I was just like, holy fucking shit, God. Yes! I was so excited in the game. After I played it that first time, I've played it so many times since then, I've lost count of how many times I've played it, because I beat it on, you know, normal, because I always played on normal at first, because I don't know how the game's going to be. Then I beat it on hard, beat it on survival just last weekend, and then I've been playing it on New Game Plus, I beat it on easy, because at first that was the only one, that was the only option available, and now I'm playing it on normal, and I would play it on hard, and I'm going to play it on survival. Because I want to try to get as close to platinum as I can, because I know I'm not going to, but just, yeah, I wanted to play it again one last time before I play The Last of Us Part 2, because I already put in the pre-order for it, so I can get it on Friday, I can pick it up on Friday, and I'm just so excited. Like I said, I haven't checked out any of the... I haven't looked at any of the leaks. The quote-unquote leaks for Part 2. Which, again, turns out a lot of it was fake. A lot of it was either just bullshit, or it was early concept, early development stuff that's not in the final game. Either way, I couldn't care less. I could not care less about any of that. Because I trust Naughty Dog. They have never disappointed me. They didn't disappoint me with Uncharted Drake's Fortune. They didn't disappoint me with Uncharted 2, you know, Among Thieves. They didn't disappoint me with Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. They did not disappoint me with The Last of Us. They did not disappoint me with Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. They did not disappoint me with Uncharted The Lost Legacy. So I know. Oh, and they didn't disappoint me with Jack and Daxter either. So I know they're not going to disappoint me with The Last of Us Part 2. Now, whether or not it's going to surpass the first game, I don't know yet. But I hope it will. And that is going to conclude my first video game review on this damn channel. Like, I did not expect to go almost an hour and a half. I'm at 1 hour. Sorry, let me take another drink. Okay, I'm at 1 hour and 20 minutes. I did not expect to go that long talking about this game right here, The Last of Us. I did not expect to go over an hour. I expected maybe 45 minutes. I did not think I would go over an hour, almost an hour and a half. But you know what? Much like my Greatest Matches in WrestleMania History podcast I did last year, I went 2 hours talking about wrestling matches. just talking about my favorite wrestling matches and why I love those matches so much. And just, when I'm talking about something I'm excited for and passionate about, I can't shut up. So here we are, talking for almost an hour and a half about The Last of Us, remastered version on the PlayStation 4. And all my friends who recommended the game to me, thank you all so much. My Nick and Mustafa and whoever else that I'm forgetting, but they're the first to come to mind. Known them since high school. They are some of the greatest people I've ever known, and I thank them very much for recommending the game to me, because it is a great game that, like I said at the beginning of this, it changed me in so many ways. Like I even said it on commenting on somebody's thing, either on Twitter or Instagram, I don't remember, where I said The Last of Us changed the way I look at a lot of things in my real life. Like I said, I don't think any other game has ever had that kind of impact on me. And we'll see what The Last of Us Part 2, how that impacts me. And can't wait to pick it up this Friday so I can play it. I am gonna get a review for it either the following week if I can finish it in time, or just at whatever point that I finish the game. So expect a review for The Last of Us Part 2 sometime in the next 2 months. I'll give it a 2 month period to do this review. But yes, thank you all again so much for tuning into this, for watching, for listening. And if you're not, please subscribe to the Mendatized Podcast right here on YouTube, you can get the audio only version on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Castbox, Radio Public, Breaker. And check out the Mendatized Podcast store. The link is in the description below. And have all kinds of shirts on there. I'm trying to bring more variety of different shirts on there. Like the newest shirt that I unveiled is the ABACABB, the Mortal Kombat Blood Code, on there. It's my favorite design that I've done so far. It's the lettering. The letters are done in the same style of the original Mortal Kombat logo, with a little blood splatter on the back and a video game remote where the cord is connected to the letter A. That's available in t-shirt, tank top, baseball tee, and the colors for heather and white. So I hope you'll check those out. I think I even have that one available as stickers and other stuff. Let me check that out real quick. Alright, here we are. Let me see if I have that available as in those other items. I do not know for sure. I do not know. Alright, let's see. Nope, I only have it as t-shirt, baseball tee, and tank top. And it comes in classic t-shirt and V-neck t-shirt for anyone who, is interested in that. So, that link will be in the description. And also, if you can, support me on Patreon. That link is in the description as well. $1 a month. I don't ask for much. I'm a cheap guy, so I expect cheap patrons. And my social media, all the links are in the description below. My Twitter, my Instagram, my Vero. my wrestling page, Not for the Count, on Facebook, if you want to check that out. And my email is in the description as well, if y'all ever want to email anything to me. You know, my DMs and my email is always open to anybody. And although certain people have called me a hypocrite on some of that, but I'll get to that, you know, another time, because that's a story for another day. But anyways, as I always say, just thank you so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing. I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I truly, genuinely do. And I'm off to bed now, and this is probably going to be uploaded on Wednesday. So, yeah. And yeah, Wednesday. So by the time you guys see this, it will be Wednesday, June 17th. Yes, June 17th. But yeah, thank you all so much for watching, listening, subscribing. I love and appreciate every single one of you. And like I said, I'm off to bed now. Hope you all are staying safe and healthy and taking care of yourselves and your loved ones. And this has been the inaugural Video Game Reviews from the Minotites Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time. Bye-bye. And bye-bye.